Okay, who is this guy, gal running the show? Well, in order to get it out of the usual guy, gal kind of conversation, I want you to kind of imagine the following scenario. You're in a room, and in that room with you is this humongous elephant. And it's so big that you wish it would kind of go away. So you figure out a way that you can make it invisible. You lower the lights in a certain way. You do something so that that elephant suddenly kind of like disappears from view. It's still there, but you kind of ignore it. You're ignoring the elephant in your own room. I want you to kind of think that your essential self or soul, or this thing I'm talking about, is this elephant. I mean, I want to talk a little bit about your relationship to it. Well, first of all, let's find out how you and the elephant get together. There have been experiments done, and now I'm going to talk a little bit about neurophysiology. There have been experiments done in which people have looked at when and where you become conscious of events that are taking place. Now, we normally tend to believe that we become conscious of things as they take place, and that we normally believe that when we wish something to happen, we just intend or wish or bring it into our consciousness. Like, for example, I want to have a cigar. So I go for the cigar box and I puck out a cigar. Of course, now you don't smoke cigars anymore. So I want to have a cup of tea. So I get up, I go to the kitchen, I boil some water, I take out some tea, put it in a pot, blah, blah, blah. Whatever it is, we think we're in control. We have this sense that we're the one that's creating that scenario. But I want you to consider this. These neurophysiologists who've done these experiments, and now I'm referring to a guy by the name of Benjamin Libet and Bertram Feinstein, these are two that I often refer to in my work, who did some early neurophysiology, did some experimentation on people that, for one reason or another, had to go through brain surgery, which meant that parts of their brains had to be excised because they were either cancerous or there was a growth of some sort that was beginning to show that it could interfere with neural conduction, whatever. The brain, by the way, is a rather interesting thing because what it has actually, it has neural tissue, which is where all that conduction, electricity, and stuff goes on, but it also has supporting tissue. They're called glia or glue. Glia means glue, actually. They're the structural cells that support and separate so that the various neurons don't all glump together in one great big neuronal pile. The glia are the cells that usually have problems. When you have a brain tumor, they're the ones that have the tumor. Anyway, these are people that were having a surgical procedure done, which meant that the skull cap had to be removed and the surface of the brain was exposed to the surgeon's knife. And during this time in the early 80s, it was also possible to do experiments in which you could put electrodes, that is, paste little pasties with little tiny wires attached to them. You could paste these electrodes on the brain, and you could look to see when certain parts of the brain would fire. Now, the reason this is interesting, of course, is that the neocortex, the cortical region of the brain, has information that tells us when we are sensing information. For example, if somebody were to grab my right hand and squeeze it, you could actually see in my neocortical regions, in the somatosensory area of my brain, which is on the surface, you could actually see electrical firing going on, telling me that that is my right hand being squeezed. If it was my left hand being squeezed, you would see across a fissure, you would see the other side of the brain firing, and that would tell you that was the other hand being squeezed. Or if I was smelling a flower, then it would be a certain area of the oral cortex, the smell cortex. Or if I was seeing something, it would be the occipital cortex that would be firing. In other words, various parts of the brain would fire according to sensations that were being received in the brain. That makes sense. The brain obviously got to be involved in what's going on and your sensing of the world around you. Okay, so what was happening is Ben Libet would actually paste electrodes at various parts of the brain and look to see when the brain actually fired and try to figure out what was actually going on in terms of timing, in terms of when does that brain receive what is called neuronal adequacy? When does it become neuronally full enough with electrical charge in order for the brain to function and the person to willfully get up and do something or respond to the sensation that is being received? That was the basic idea. Okay, well, during these tests, there were some very surprising results that were found. For example, it was found that in order to really respond to a sensory input, the brain needed to kind of collect data over a period of time, not very long, maybe 300 milliseconds, that's a little longer than a quarter of a second or so, or up to a half a second, and then it would achieve what is called neuronal adequacy, and at that point, it seemed to be able to deal with the information that was coming to it from the body that was sending, you know, through the neurons up to the brain, that kind of information, like squeezing your hand or feeling an ice cube with your toe or something like that. Okay, well, what's amazing about that is that when you have an experience like squeezing your hand being squeezed, or when you have an experience of stepping on a hot coal or something like that, it doesn't take anything like a quarter of a second or a half a second for you to respond to it. Otherwise, your foot would burn off. I mean, you'd have a horrible time if you had to wait a full quarter to a half a second every time some new sensation came in. You respond like that instantly. You're moving right along. You're getting into it right away. So how is it that your brain, that you are doing what you have to do, and yet your brain doesn't even know it yet? Whoa, this began to be a kind of a mystery. What was going on there? What was causing you to not be aware or to be aware when you're not aware? Or, wait a minute, you're aware, but your brain isn't aware. How can you be aware when your brain? What's going on there? What's going on there? That was quite a mystery. And then there were certain experiments that showed, indeed, that if you interfered with the time of neuronal adequacy in the brain, you could actually anesthetize the brain, and the person may not even respond or get that his hand was being squeezed or he was stepping on a hot coal or an ice cube or something like that. You can actually cut that off. In fact, anesthesia is designed to do just that. Well, so this is rather interesting. People respond very quickly when they respond, even though their brains haven't had time to integrate all that information, which is kind of a mystery. And they can not respond if later, after the incipient disturbance, if the brain is anesthetized in some way, they don't respond. So what's going on there? How can you respond instantly, and then if a quarter of a second later something happens to your brain, you don't respond instantly a quarter of a second earlier? We're in Twilight Zone land. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. You mean something that happens to me a quarter of a second later keeps me from noticing what's happening to me now? And if what happened to me a quarter of a second later doesn't happen to me, then I respond now. In other words, how I respond depends on what's happening in the future. Wait, the mind goes nuts with that. And yet that's what the data was indicating, that there was some kind of weird time shift going on in the brain. But that's not all. It gets even weirder. What happened in the early and other experiments was the following. Libet asked people, okay, we want to see when your will, when your intent, when you want to do something, when that actually enters into the equation, when your brain responds to that. We want to see that. Here was a test. Very simple. I'm going to flash a light on the screen. If you decide that you like the light, you'd do nothing. If you decide you don't like the light, you press a button. That's it. You press if you don't like, you do nothing if you like. That's it. Nothing more special than that. Pretty simple test, right? Here's what goes on. You would think that the liking or the disliking is something that you put into operation when you press the button. Libet tells people, look, I don't want you to think ahead of time. I don't know what the light's going to be, but I'm ready. I'm going to press no matter what that light's going to be. I'm going to press. He says, no. You have to really make a judgment call based upon what you see at the moment that you see it. You can't make that judgment call based upon, I'm not going to press the next time. 2 times after that, I am going to press. You can't plan ahead, so to speak. He says, you got to call it when you see it. That's it. Okay. So people said, all right, we'll do that. Presumably they're doing that. So here's what happens. Libet notices that before the light goes on, as much as a half a second before, the brain is already making up its mind. It knows it's going to press or not press the button. And the person is only doing what the brain is telling it to do, or something in the brain is telling it to do, or something is telling it to do, well before it knows it's doing it. It's kind of like what I call riding an elephant. You're on top of an elephant. You're a little guy. You're the ego guru. And you're riding the elephant. And you have a little stick in your hand. And if you want the elephant to turn to the right, you tap the elephant on its right ear. If you want the elephant to turn to the left, you tap the elephant on its left ear. So you can direct the direction. You can tell the elephant which way to go. The only problem with this whole scenario is, even though you think you're the one that's deciding, go to the right, go to the left, you're not. The elephant is already going, and then you tap. It's almost like the elephant is communicating with you psychically and telling you, we're going to the right, and you're getting a thought, I'm going to choose to go to the right. Or the elephant saying, we're going to the left, then you think, I'm choosing to go to the left. But it's an afterthought. You're just riding the sacred elephant. You're just riding your own elephant. You're just riding, you're going along for the ride, but you think you have the illusion that you are in control. This is the way it seems to work. It's, oh, well, that's a good idea. Let's go in that direction. I am the king. I'm the one that made the decision to go in that direction. But you ain't.